We're here today to observe Yom HaZikaron, which is the memorial day for all those who fell in Israel's far too many wars. And at the beginning of the state, Yom HaAtzma'ut, Israel Independence Day, used to be celebrated, but not Yom HaZikaron. The advent of Yom HaZikaron, and especially the advent of having a Yom HaZikaron, having a memorial day, right before Yom HaAtzma'ut, is very recent. And it seems that the reason why it was necessary is because at the early time of the state, for example, I have a grandfather who was born in Romania. I had a grandfather, he passed away around 30 years ago. And his entire life's dream was to move to Israel. And after the Holocaust, for him, having the state of Israel, no question, this is amazing. He didn't need anything to inspire him to realize the significance of the state of Israel. But as time went on, people began to realize that the state of Israel, yeah, it's great, maybe, we're not sure. So one way to emphasize the significance, to make it really hit home, was to observe a Yom HaZikaron, a memorial day before Yom HaAtzma'ut. When you realize that the most recent numbers I have is there are 20,526 soldiers, Jewish soldiers, who died in all of Israel's wars.
How many?
20,526.
I've been more than that.
This is the number I got as of 15 minutes ago.
No number.
1,500 died pre-state. 6,373 died in that first war, in the Mohammed HaShikror in 1948. And what I want to do with you is just learn through a few sources to try to figure out what exactly these people died for. It's a hard question to ask. We know they died for Israel. But what exactly is Israel? What does Israel mean? That's really the question. Now, just as a way of introduction, the Gemara, the Talmud, teaches us in Masechet Brachot that there are three special gifts that God gave the Jewish people, and each of these three gifts he gave through a tremendous amount of yisurin, through pain. These gifts are Torah. Right? Anyone who's involved in learning of Torah knows it ain't easy. Right? It's a painful experience. You break your head only to realize that you really don't understand it. Okay, Torah involves Yisurin. Olam Haba, if a person wants to merit the next world, that involves Yisurin, that involves pain. And Eretz Yisrael, the way we attain the land of Israel, involves Yisurin. There is pain involved. Unfortunately, a lot of pain, a lot of blood. But by focusing for a few moments on the pain and the blood, it should make our celebration even greater. So the question I have in front of you is, why exactly did these people, these Kedoshim, these holy Jews, why did they fight and why did they fall for the state of Israel? We know the state of Israel is different. We know the land of Israel is different. There's no question. There are more mitzvot that we do in the land of Israel than we do in the rest of the world. That's the first source we have here. Right? There are mitzvot hatluyot ba'aretz. There are these obligations, which are agricultural. They depend on the land. For example, what are some of the mitzvot hatluyot ba'aretz?
Shemitah.
Right? The seventh year, we leave all the fields fallow. Right? We don't do that in New York, and you don't do it in Phoenix, I assume. Right? Shemitah is a mitzvah tzliya ba'aretz. Shruma, right, we have to take off from our produce a little bit, give it to the Kohen, give it to the priest. We don't do that outside of the state of Israel. Right, there is agricultural mitzvahs that apply in the state of Israel. And at first glance, we would think that that's what makes the state of Israel unique. There's a whole set of commandments. How many? Anyone have a guess? How many commandments can only be fulfilled in the land of Israel? We have 613. How many of these commandments can only be performed in Israel? Huh?
Almost half.
A little bit less than half. Rabbi Yecheskel Abramsky, who was a super genius, he was a member of the London Besten, and then he moved to the land of Israel, and he wrote a wonderful commentary in the Tosefta called the Chazon Yecheskel. He counted that 195 of the 613 mitzvos can only be done in Israel. So we know Israel is quantitatively a place where we can do more. But what about qualitatively? Is there anything about those mitzvos that we have to do outside of Israel that doing them in Israel somehow enhances the experience? Now, the real question to ask would be, why is it that we should move to Israel? That's kind of, I understand quantitatively, right? There's 195 commandments that we could do only in Israel. But what about quality? Is there something about the quality of the land that would indicate that even those commandments that we do outside of Israel somehow are enhanced, enriched, better in Israel? So let's take a look at this source. I saw some of you were doing it before. Right? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu want to go to Israel? Right? We know that Moshe prayed to God how many times? Over 400 times. Right? He's praying to God, please let me enter the land of Israel. Why did he want to go in? What does the Gemara say? Anyone remember?
To do more mitzvahs.
To do more mitzvahs, right? Moshe wants to enter Israel to do more mitzvahs. So what does that indicate? Does that indicate that there's anything about the land of Israel other than just a quantitative advantage? What's a simple reading of this Gemara? The simple reading is that Moshe says there are many mitzvahs that I can only do in Israel. Quantitatively, he said, I want to do Shemitah. I want to do Trumos. I want to do Masros. I want to leave the land fallow during the seventh year. I want to take off some percentage of my produce and give it to the Kohen. Right? Quantitatively, that's what this source would indicate. Correct? But that can't be. Okay, what I am arguing this evening with you is that there has to be something qualitative about the land of Israel. And if that's the case, how can we understand this Gemara? When the Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to enter the land of Israel only, right? It's not because he wanted to eat the fruits, right? No, sir. It's not because he wanted the good life. He only wanted it because of the extra mitzvahs, but it really sounds like the only advantage of Israel is quantitative. Is there anyone here who wants to make a suggestion as to why Moshe Rabbeinu might be different than us?
He was holier.
He was holier. Okay, and therefore? What do we gain from Israel? We say the land of Israel, if it's a qualitative experience, why is it better than Phoenix? Why is the mitzvos that I do in Israel on a higher level than the mitzvos I do in Phoenix? I don't do that many mitzvos in Phoenix. I don't live here. But it would seem that what you're suggesting is absolutely correct. The land of Israel is special because it's a place that we can experience God in a more first-hand sort of way. And Moshe was holier, therefore.
He needed it less.
So this is a point that's made by one of the great early Zionists, who was actually a Hasidish Rebbe, the Hasidish Rebbe of Sachachov, the Avni Nezer. In one of his tshuvos, the Avni Nezer points out that Moshe Rabbeinu, right, this is a man who speaks to God like I speak to you. Face to face, direct communication. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't need the land of Israel to directly connect with God. So for Moshe, the land of Israel is only a quantitative improvement. For Moshe, he wants to enter the land of Israel just to do some extra commandments. But for me, you, and everyone else, for us, Israel adds a unique dimension. Israel adds something to the quality of the mitzvot that we perform.
You're going to have to explain that better. See, I would think that it would be fair to ask that nobody will achieve the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. Yet when they go to Eretz Yisrael, despite the fact that they go to Eretz Yisrael, there's a greater quality to what they do. Why wouldn't we argue that for Moshe himself the same would happen?
That Moshe also would have.
If inherently, when we're outside the land of Israel, when you're outside
so,
the land
again,
of Israel,
I assume, like the Rambam writes in the Ikari HaEmuna, that one of the fundamental principles of faith is that Moshe's level of communion, of conversation with God, was on such a high level, no one will ever achieve it.
Yeah, but then what benefit would the mitzvahs not be?
What?
And why was it a punishment not for him not to have?
No, so the punishment for Moshe not to go in the land is precisely what the Gemara is saying. Quantitatively, he could do more. There are certain mitzvahs Moshe couldn't do because he was outside of the land.
But the Gemara says Hashem gave him credit.
What?
The
conclusion of the Gemara is that don't worry, we'll give you credit anyway. But the reason he desired it was because he didn't know that we would pull that stunt.
Despite the fact that he got the credit, Sam was right. It says, Yom Bi'is Hanaf Hashem Bilal.
Despite the fact
Moshe complained to the Jewish people, because of you, I didn't get in. And the pasuk that is quoted in the Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu lost out.
Moshe Rabbeinu lost out because ultimately, actually doing it myself is better than getting credit for it. Credit isn't everything.
It proves your point, though.
Okay.
It proves your point that even for Moshe Rabbeinu, going into Eretz Yisrael itself would be a qualitative level of growth. Despite the fact that he was so special, and all of the door prizes that the Gemara says that God gave Moshe really, really didn't help.
Perhaps I just don't think that that's the simple reading. The simple reading of the Gemara is the Gemara is saying Moshe is arguing quantitatively. I hear what you're saying.
No, I'm just pointing out the pasuk the Gemara says. The pasuk the Gemara reads, it says that Moshe bore the sin. Moshe was Nimna Mesa Midbar. He bore the sin. So there's a negative aspect to it, despite the fact, the very possibility
right.
of the
okay.
despite the fact.
Fair
I'm
point.
I'm only strengthening your point.
Fair point. I mean, there's another way of saying this entire thing, which is that Moshe Rabbeinu, where was he? Moshe has this whole conversation. He tells God, I want to enter the land of Israel. Where is he at this point? Anyone remember? He's in Arvos Moab. He's on the east bank of the Jordan, right? Now, the east bank of the Jordan biblically has the status of the land of Israel to a certain extent. It's a whole question as to which mitzvos don't apply in the East Bank, which do apply. To a certain extent, it has the same status of the land of Israel, but not to the full extent. Right? This is the way Rabbi Yehoshua of Kutna, others, go about dealing with this Gemara, that what Moshe Rabbeinu is saying is that, listen, I'm doing all the mitzvos anyway, but not to the fullest. That really pushes it into the qualitative area. Let's continue for a minute. Okay? We see over here, Avraham Avinu. What does he want to do? Right? We have the source on the second page. What does Avraham want to do? What's he striving to do?
He wants to buy a burial plot
for Sarah, right? He wants to bury his wife. Now, he wants to bury his wife in the land of Israel, correct? Tell me, at the time of Avraham Avinu, did the land of Israel have its full Kedusha? Everything that we talk about the land of Israel is only after the Jews settled the land. At the time of Avraham, the Kedusha may not have been full. So why did Avraham want to buy the plot?
What would you base that on?
What?
What would you base
I'm basing that this on a number of Gemaros that seem to say that the Kedusha, the specialness, the holiness of the land, came about through the act of kibush, of conquering the land and dividing the land. Only at the time of Yehoshua, only when Joshua came in and they conquered the land, that's when the land really received its holiness.
Is there no Kedusha to Israel right now?
What?
There's no Kedusha to Israel right now, then?
No, we live after Joshua.
We haven't conquered the land.
Well, that's one of the things that we're going to talk about, I hope, whether or not we're actually conquering the land to a limited extent today. Perhaps the Ramban tells us, right, Nachmanides writes, that the mitzvah to live in Israel today is because when I live there, I'm conquering a small parcel of the land. My backyard is now conquered.
So,
Avraham Avinu. So, the point is that there is something about the land of Israel above just Kiyum HaMitzvos. When Avraham Avinu goes through the land, he makes a certain, according to the Gemara, he's making a Kinyan Chazak on the land, perhaps. Right? Now, what's Avraham Avinu doing? Rav Soloveitchik used to explain that there are two elements. There's what we call Shem Eretz Yisrael. There's what we call the land of Israel per se. And then there is what is called Kiddushas Eretz Yisrael, the holiness of the land. What makes it special, the extra mitzvos. Avraham Avinu is infusing the land with a certain amount of specialness, but not all the way yet. The full mitzvos won't apply yet, but it still is special. It already had the status of Eretz Yisrael from the time of Avraham Avinu. There is something to the land, again, the fact that Avraham wanted to bury his wife in Israel, and this is a point that's not made by me. This point is made by one of the Rishonim, the Kaftor Vaferach, Rabbi Yeshtori HaProfi, in his Sefer on Eretz Yisrael. He makes this point that the only reason why Avraham Avinu wanted to buy the land, it's not because there's any mitzvot that apply to the land yet, but it's because, even so, it's a special place. It's a special place without mitzvot. We know there's a practice when the Jews came back from Yemen, right? Operation Magic Carpet, I believe. So they came from Yemen the first time, so they got off the plane, bent down, kissed the ground. Right? This is a practice that they had, kissing the ground. And the practice comes from the Gemara, the bottom of this page. Oh, wow. Right, the Gemara, thank you. The Gemara at the bottom of the page says that Rabbi Abba would kiss the kipi de Akko. He kissed, and the translation here says, the stones of Akko. And there's a whole discussion with, is Akko part of Israel or not part of Israel? The fact that he's kissing it shows that it's part of Israel. That's really the discussion. Interestingly, turn over to the next page. What does the word kipi mean? There are two explanations in Rashi. The first, it's a hard word, almogim. An almog is a species of an almond tree. That's the first explanation of Rashi. Rabbi Abba kissed almond trees in Israel. According to the second explanation, he kisses the rocks. What's the difference between whether he's kissing the almond trees or he's kissing the rocks? Right. I don't do any mitzvos with rocks. Anyone who says that you do mitzvos with rocks is lying to you. Right? There are no mitzvos that we can do with rocks. So now, right, if he kisses an almond tree, I understand. He's saying that there's something holy about the land of Israel, something holy about the trees. I can do mitzvos with the tree. Right? I have to give some of it trumos, masros. But if he's kissing the rocks, what do the rocks show? It shows that the land itself is special. Even without any mitzvos, even if you hold, I think Menachem is his name in the back, right? Even if you hold like Menachem, he argued before that maybe today we don't have any of the mitzvos on the biblical level. Maybe that's true, but that doesn't take away.
We don't. I was just saying that according to your line of thinking, that question could arise at all, that we don't have any. I don't agree with
it, it certainly is possible to argue.
I would say that the land of Israel from day one, from creation, was holy.
Correct.
Whether it could be used proper or not is only by us.
So I'll agree with you that the land of Israel itself is holy, and that, though, seems to connect with this explanation that we're kissing the rocks themselves. Right? This would dovetail more with the understanding that when Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to enter the land of Israel, it's because just being there somehow is special, and we have to play with that Gemara. And this is really what the next source is. Here's a Gemara in Tanis. One of the special elements of the land of Israel is what? The Pasuk, right? This one you don't even need a Gemara for. It's a verse in the Torah. This is a land that God seeks out more than any other land. And the Gemara explains, what does that mean? The Gemara says, well, God himself sends rain on the land of Israel. Rain on the rest of the world, that is just sent out through God's agents. And I don't know what this means, right? Obviously, everything is done by God, right? But the point is that there's an element of God's presence in the land of Israel, which is true, special, different than everywhere else in the world. Right? This is why, by the way, the Kuzari writes that prophecy can only be in Israel. Right? There's no such thing as a prophet outside of Israel. Now, you'll ask me, there were. Well, those prophets who got Nevuah outside of Israel are getting Nevuah about Israel. But Israel, the land itself, has a certain spiritual element, which is why there's only prophecy in Israel. It's the land that God himself shows favoritism to. This is the land that God himself waters. There's a fascinating pasuk here, and a commentary of the Ramban, Nachmanides. Right? There are certain prohibitions, arayos, right? Sexual immorality. Now, does that only apply in the land of Israel? I don't think so, right? These prohibitions apply everywhere in the world. Yet the Torah, after describing this week's parasha, actually, right? In this week's parasha, the Torah says that if you violate the arayos, so the land will spit you out. V'atakiha aretz es yosheveha. Right? The English here translates it even in the harsher sense than I did. And the land will vomit out its inhabitants. It's pretty harsh. Now, the Ramban asks, I don't understand. I would understand if you violate Shemitah, like the Torah says in Parashas Bahar. If you don't keep the seventh year, you don't keep some mitzvah that has to do with the land, then the land should expel you. Then the land should kick you out. But if you don't keep arayos, so then why would the land expel you? The answer is that the land itself is special, and the land can't handle us doing these averos. It's a simple reading of the pasuk. But even more than that, religious acts which are the same in Phoenix, or I should say in this case, irreligious acts, which are the same in Phoenix and in Israel, but violating them in Israel is much worse. It's much worse. This is God's palace. And in God's palace, so a violation suffers much worse consequences. The story is told, actually, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who's the son-in-law of Rav Soloveitchik, also studied in his previous life in the Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin. He studied with Rav Huttner. And he remembers that one time Rav Huttner came to visit Israel. Rav Huttner was a legendary figure in the Yeshiva world, quite a character. And Rav Lichtenstein recalls that he went to visit Rav Huttner one day, and it was Rav Huttner arrived in Israel in the afternoon, and he sees that Rav Huttner is in his hotel room in Pension Reich in Beit HaKerem, and he's wearing tefillin. So Rav Aaron Lichtenstein says, "Why are you wearing your tefillin? I assume that you wore tefillin on the plane this morning. Why are you wearing tefillin now?" And Rav Huttner reported, he said, "Yeah, but what I wore this morning was Chutz La'aretz tefillin. Now I have to put on Eretz Yisrael tefillin. The mitzvos that we do in Israel are more significant than the mitzvos we do in Chutz La'aretz." Of course, this is all coming from the Ramban's framework, right? Remember, the Ramban, Nachmanides, is the one who said that how is it that Yaakov married two sisters?
Outside.
Good question, no? How did Yaakov marry two sisters? What's the answer?
Outside
of Israel. And the Ramban develops a whole worldview that mitzvos we do outside of Israel, you can't say they're devoid of significance, God forbid. They're very significant. Every mitzvah is extremely significant. But there's even greater significance to the same act when it's done in Israel. Why? Because this is God's land. This is God's land. Yeah, Menachem?
I was just going to say that Rabbi Cook said that when you're outside of Israel, all you're doing is practicing.
Okay. So it's not just Rav Kook, it's a comment of the Sifrei that actually the Ramban bases his remarks on. The Sifrei said, "Hatzivi lach tziyunim make reminders for yourself. That means do mitzvos outside of Israel, so that when you get to Israel, you could do the right thing. That's what the Ramban quotes from the Sifrei. Again, it doesn't mean that we, God forbid, right? No, I don't want anyone to say that I told you, right, that you don't have to do mitzvos outside of Israel. Of course not. You have to do mitzvos outside of Israel, but mitzvos that you do in Israel are even more significant. There, so the land of Israel is significant. It's God's land. Right? That's basically what we're trying to argue. And we're also trying to show another point. The land of Israel is significant because there's something that it does for the Jewish people. Okay, I want you just to take a look at this last page, a Gemara here in Hor Yos. I want to focus for a minute. There's a few mitzvos, right, which are not agricultural. We began. Israel's different because they're agricultural mitzvos. And we said there's a total of 195 mitzvos that apply in Israel, don't apply anywhere else. It's a high number. But not all those mitzvos are agricultural. In fact, I'll give you just a list of three. Three mitzvos that we have. Right, one of them is this Gemara here in Hor Yos. There is a special halacha that if a Beis Din makes a mistake, right, rabbis make mistakes. Right, there's an entire masechta, an entire tractate in the Gemara, that rabbis make mistakes. They give a wrong psak. They tell you that you're allowed to do work on, you're allowed to, let's say, turn on electric lights on the Sabbath. It's a mistake. Everyone listens to them. Right? So the halacha is, you have to bring a special offering. Instead of bringing a female goat or a female sheep, now you bring a par. You bring a male cow. Right? A male cow is called a bull, but bull sometimes refers to something that's castrated, so we have to be careful. So you bring a male cow. Fine. Par helem dover shel tzibor. You bring a single cow, one carbon for everybody. And the Gemara says, well, one second, who did something wrong? Beis Din said you're allowed to turn on the lights on Shabbos. Who didn't listen to them? The Gemara tells us that the people who don't listen are the Jews in Israel. Those are the only... Here, look at this Gemara. Behora, right, Rav Asi said, with regard to the sacrifice brought for an erroneous ruling, the par halam dover shel tzibor, halach achar rov yoshvei Eretz Yisrael. We follow most of the inhabitants of Israel. Most of the inhabitants of Israel. One second. Jews who live outside of Israel, if you turn on lights on Shabbos, you also have to bring the carbon. Right? You also have to, if you do it in, you also have to bring the sacrifice. How come for this sacrifice, we only follow the Jews in Israel? Another question, right? We're Jews. We like to answer a question with another question. Second question. There's another halacha, Egla Arufa. Right? On the last page, we have all the psukim in the Torah. You find a dead body. You don't know who killed it. So what do? So you take a young calf and you bring it to a valley, right? Not the most pleasant thing. And you chop it in the back of its neck, right? That's what you do. Nice. Nice mitzvah. Yet this mitzvah applies only in Israel. Is this agricultural? No. Right? Why does it only apply in Israel? And there's a third thing that Rav Soloveitchik put together, which is what we call smicha. Right? I have to tell you a little secret. All of our rabbis today are fakes. Everyone.
We already know that.
The rabbis know it. Right? Well, because there used to be an institution called smicha, which is what Moshe Rabbeinu gave to Yehoshua. Moshe puts his hands on Yehoshua, and he said, Yehoshua, you are now receiving the teachings I got from God. And Yehoshua gave that smicha to Zakenim. Right? This is the first mission on Pirkei Avos. We have a line, a transmission, a mesorah, right? Generation to generation. Moshe to Yehoshua to Zakenim. That's real smicha. We lost this line. We don't have it anymore. So our rabbis today, right, we give them what we call smicha, but it ain't the same. Right, there's no direct transmission to Israel. to Moshe Rabbeinu. Fine. The halacha is, the Gemara in Sanhedrin teaches us that smicha, this notion that one rabbi can grant to another rabbi, you can only do that in Israel. Why? It ain't agricultural. Ordaining rabbis is not anything that has to do with the ground. So why is that these three mitzvos, the par halam davar shel tzibur, this korban for turning on the light on Shabbos, egla arufa, and smicha, why is that these three mitzvos are only done in Israel? So Rav Soloveitchik had a fascinating notion, which is really what the Gemara here in Har Yoh says. Let's read that Gemara. Why is it that par helam dovar shel tzibur is only done in Israel? Why is it this korban, this special offering that you bring, when people listen to a mistake that the Bezdin made, how come that's only in Israel? So the Gemara derives it from a pasuk, Vaya'as Shlomo ba'isahi asechag, right? Shlomo made the celebration. Ko Yisrael imo kahol gadol milavo chamos ad nahar Mitzrayim. Ad nachal Mitzrayim. A great celebration for everybody. And who is everybody? Everybody is all those who live from the approach to Hamath until the river of Egypt. That means all those who live in Israel is called everybody. And the Gemara has a fascinating comment. The Gemara says, Hani hu de'ikri kohal. Only those who live in Israel are called congregation, are called community. Outside of Israel, you're not called kohal. Apparently, the Gemara is saying that outside of Israel, to a certain extent, we live life as individuals. Communal existence doesn't really happen outside of Israel. It happens. We have a minyan. We're going to daven with our minyan in 2 minutes. Right? We'll daven with our minyan in 2 minutes. So we have minyanim outside of Israel. We have community. But community in the full sense of the word only happens inside Israel. Therefore, there are certain mitzvot which are not mitzvot for the individual. Certain mitzvot are mitzvot for the community. For example, let's talk about Egla Arufa. What happens? You find a dead body. You don't know who killed him. So what do you do? The entire community suffers, right? We bring this young calf and we say, God, forgive the entire community. Well, the entire community of Israel, there's one murderer. We don't know who it is. Why are you asking to forgive the entire community? The answer is that the notion of communal responsibility to the full extent, and even the Gemara by Arifa sounds this way, the original notion of full communal responsibility is an Israeli notion. It's a notion that happens in Israel. Par helam dover shel tzibur, the entire congregation violates something based on Bezdin. You bring a carbon. Why? Because it's communal. I'm not an individual. One carbon for everybody. That's only in Israel. And smicha also. The notion of ordaining rabbis. Right? Why do we ordain rabbis? It's not to be individuals who are very learned. The ordination of rabbis, the real ordination, is for communal responsibility, that you are now a line in the transmission of this Mesorah that goes all the way back. That's what forges community. So the basic point that I wanted to get to today is two things. The land of Israel is special, both quantitatively, but also qualitatively. It's God's land. That's one. And it's special. The specialness of the land manifests itself in the mitzvot that we do, both in the positive sense and in the negative sense. We do something wrong, we suffer more in Israel. We do something right, it has all of a deeper meaning. Tefillin in Israel is deeper tefillin. It's somehow better. It's more enhanced. And then we said it's not just our relationship to God, but our entire notion of the community is different in Israel. The nation of Israel, the country of Israel, the land of Israel itself, has within it the idea to form kohal, the idea that we can form a community and we're not just a band of individuals.
Just for the tefillah itself, just for the davening itself, if the on the other side of the mezitza.
There are chairs on the other side.
There are chairs.